you, Robert. And Lush, we're here to celebrate your career and especially your friendship. I want to make sure of that. And in thinking about what to say here today and looking at Lush's career and accomplishment, I started thinking about, so what happened next? Where are we going with all of this? And there is a lot to learn in a trajectory like the one that Lush has had. And it's been a long one, okay? 1954, he got his bachelor. I don't want to get too much into this, Lush. 1968, you had a PhD, and I was just trying to romance my first girlfriend at the time. So it's been a long career, and I appreciate the young spirit that you still have. That's great. So I know I'm going to run out of time, by the way. So I'm going to try to go fast, so you need to let me know when I'm getting there. There are many things that, you know, came to mind thinking about these things. Many contributions from Lush, some of them have been already remarked, particularly in the soil physics, water, solid transport, then start putting together into algorithms, models, and then he ended up putting it all together into cropping systems. This one I put here, I was a chair until a few months ago, and I cannot help myself still doing this kind of things. So that's Lush in a summary, you know. A lot of papers, tremendous productivity, citations all over the place, a great age index, and all those kind of things that chairs like to evaluate, okay? But that is a summary in the formal sense of a long and productive career. I like this part of Lush career because it really claimed the kind of things and interests that I have. And I appreciate his effort, already were mentioned by Robert before, and especially the series in advancing agricultural system modeling he's been leading the last several years. I think we are in number 6 by now, pretty amazing. I still remember the green one, that was the first one you brought me into with 1 or 2 papers, I don't remember, and I do remember that you kept me quite a bit on time on that one. So, in thinking about this, we've made a lot of progress in trying to understand the system. Even yet, we still have a lot of doubts about what we really know, okay? But there is progress. Several people in the room today have contributed to that, you know, in addition to Lush. And it has been a great time. A lot of things have been uncovered, clarified, quantified, and put into algorithms. And they have been encapsulated into crop models. And then we're starting to move this idea of putting some algorithms to represent some phenomenon in a small piece of land, putting into a field, a region, and now we're running these things over the entire planet with a lot of trepidation, I have to say. But it's happening. So the conditions are changing. There's a tremendous change in, there's a digital revolution, as you well know. An example of that, a model like this that I've been working with, and I see Galen Campbell in the back there, working with him in the lab. We will run one growing season of this model. It would take 36 hours. And you were hoping that the answer would be okay at the end because your PhD depended on that. It takes a few seconds to run the same today. So, tremendous change. And then we're starting to connect things. We're going to regional scenarios now. We use this gridded system, the one we have, we use 4x4 kilometer grids that are not connected. And they represent the system with one soil, one weather, 4x4 kilometers. Okay? Think about that. Then we can go into a little bit more detail in something where you connect 10 by 10 meter pixels, now hydrologically connected. So now you have 3D type of models. You can go upscale. Big proxy is one example. We connect to the big model. It's a big scale hydrologic model. You connect that to reservoir models, riverware, to water flow in rivers, and now we produce forecast for the Department of Ecology at Washington State for future water supply and demand at the Columbia Basin scale. And we can connect also the kind of models we've been talking about here with other models like the dairy system model, for example. So that's what we're doing. A lot of us are trying things now. So where are we going from here, though? As I said, things are moving very fast. And when I say very fast, I really mean it, very fast. And on the other hand, we have a lot of limitations in the abilities of our crowd models. We've been discussing those for a few years now. And we look at things like this when this is data set that Bruce Kimball is sitting over there, Mary Copa, and we look at simulation with 30, 31 different models and tremendous variability there. Can it be reduced? I'm sure it could. We try the same thing in our region and tremendous disparities between different models. I don't have time to get into detail of that. So how do we solve this thing? First of all, we need to understand we have a problem. I think we do. But also, we need to be willing to do something different. And I don't think we have gotten to that. We still continue to think about models of blocks instead of processes, instead of exchanging, instead of open source libraries, instead of getting together to look at a specific code for specific processes. So, what about the future modelers? I think there's a possibility there. They embrace IT much readily than all of us here, for the most part. And there are some young fellows here, too. The problem is they embrace it too much, and they get in love with running all kind of algorithms with zillions of data without really understanding many times where things are going. I've seen it, and sometimes it could be dangerous. So we have two extremes. Can we do this decision-making at the field scale? I think it's kind of hard with the state of the art. And when I have to connect models with other kind of technologies, we want to do that. Mobile devices, somebody has mentioned that before. Many, in fact, are thinking about this. Autonomous systems that will be connected, that will be part of the Internet of Things, that they would run with algorithms, not full crop models with names as we do today, but algorithms that represent crop functions. You know, that's happening. The ideas are there, and they will not stop. And the problem with this is that if we don't do something fast, we're going to find that climate change is going to be over, and the ecosystem will be all spoiled. And we're still thinking about what else we need to do in our models to make it work. So it's an urgent task. What's the problem scale when we talk about regions? And what's the scale when we look at real situations on the ground? So we can do okay with models to look at scenarios. And those scenarios essentially set up certain conditions that represent a system, and then we perturb the system with changes and see how the system responds. So that's something that we can do well with models and, you know, good care about calibrations and making sure we connect to the data that we know to the extent possible. When we look at actual ground situations, and this is part of the Palouse in the Washington State, when we do 4 by 4 kilometer in here, we just flat the land, we just iron the whole thing, and we call it you know, a 4x4 kilometer cell. So another idea is to put remote sensing, and this has been around for a long time, but things are getting better. For example, a measure from Rick Allen is getting really much better. We have tested that with different covariant, different crops, and different years, with precipitation from 200 millimeters to 700 millimeters. We get very good responses to that. We can connect that to very simple algorithms based on transpiration use efficiency, based on simple harvest index, and knowing LAI also from remote sensing, and we can actually predict biomass. Okay? These are very simple things that rely on image that are getting better and better. Should we try that? Of course we should. These are yields, by the way, and there is one case that is off in the chart there. The data point is wrong, and I'm not kidding. So finally, the idea of cooperation between growers. This is going to happen. We need to have these data sets that everybody contributes to and allow us to have not the need to run a model, but to see real-time what's happening. Okay, that's where we need to go, where models will play a little role in projection, where we can see the way of what's happening because the information is all gathered real-time. And there are a lot of ideas with respect to that. Again, the clock is ticking for me too, and I'm probably the last 30 seconds here. And we need to integrate things into tools, and they're going to be used in ways that we don't even visualize today. We just don't know how it's going to be done. We know it will be done, though. And with that, I think I'd rather finish. Lush, one more time, thank you for your friendship.
You did a wonderful job staying on time, Claudio. Thank you so much.
I tried my best.
We actually have time for one question.
Oh, wow.
So, Garrett.
Very interesting presentation. So is there going to be a future for crop modeling?
Yeah. I know there's going to be a future, but we need to think differently. I think that's what it is. We need to adapt. Thank you. We need to adapt to the new needs, and those needs, as I mentioned, are changing very quickly.